Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to all our listeners. This is the Business Day Spotlight, your destination for African business made simple. And for today, we are looking at what's going on in and around the African region, neighboring countries, maybe touching a little bit more about what's happening with the economies, you know, across Africa. Because, you know, when we have things like the African Continental Free Trade Agreement coming into play, all of those things do point to, you know, greater regional integration. And we want to know how are South Africa's neighbors doing and other African economies. And to help us to unpack all of these issues, we are joined by Jacques Nel, who is the head of macroeconomic research for Africa at NKC African Economics, to discuss the issues. Jacques, good morning to you.
Good morning. Thanks for the invitation.
Thank you so much for that. I think a good place for us to start is maybe getting a sense, you know, of what's going on in and around the region. But before all of that, perhaps, you know, getting a sense on your end around which countries, you are specifically covering, you know, before we get into it.
Well, at NKC, we cover most of the major economies on the continent, but in a personal capacity, I've been keeping an eye on the East African countries. We've chatted about this before. East Africa has got some of the fastest growing economies on the continent, so that's really exciting region to look at. And I also look at Southern Africa, and unfortunately, that's not as exciting a region to look at.
Well, as unexciting as it is, it might be a good place for us to start, you know, this discussion, just, you know, I guess looking at the neighbors, you know, starting closer to home before we expand out. So when we look at what's going on in the region, what's actually going on with some of our close neighbors in South Africa?
Well, an issue that our close neighbors have is their dependence on South Africa. Just because South Africa is the economic anchor for the region, a lot of our neighbors have really close economic ties, and that's in the form of trade. You know, South Africa is a major destination for their exports, also remittances coming out of South Africa into those countries. And in the SACU region, a lot of governments in our neighboring countries are highly dependent on SACU revenue to shore up their fiscal revenue. So South Africa's weak performance, not just last year, but essentially over the past decade, has also weighed on regional neighbors. You know, in various aspects, their trade balances, their fiscal balances, and just growth. So South Africa has kind of weighed on the region over the past decade.
And when we look at that specifically for some of the countries, I guess if we zero in on a country like Botswana, how have we seen that manifesting in their economy?
Well, Botswana is an interesting case because while they are really dependent on South Africa, for instance, SACU revenues make up around a third of their government revenue, they aren't as dependent as the other countries in the region, but this is just because Botswana is so highly dependent on their diamond sector. So whatever happens in the global diamond industry, you're going to see that in the Botswana economy. And that is part of the why we saw such a collapse in their economy last year. Just to put some figures on this diamond dependence, in 2019, around 90% of Botswana exports were in the form of diamonds in terms of value. And also around a third of their government revenue is from mineral revenue. So that's in taxes, royalties, and dividends. So that just kind of shows you how dependent they are on their diamond sector. So unfortunately, while not as dependent on South Africa, they've also been struggling of late.
You know, as you're saying that, one can't help but to think about the type of risk that there is from having, such a high reliance on one commodity, you know, because if that market tanks in any way, then I guess if Nigeria is anything of a cautionary tale, then I guess that dependence that Botswana has on diamonds might be a risk for them in future. Or I guess at the moment, I'm not sure what's happening in the diamond market, because we always keep an eye on what's going on in gold, oil, etc.
Yeah, that's very true. And that's a good comparison. Oil is to Nigeria what diamonds are to Botswana. And this dependence on a single commodity, especially given that, you know, those commodity prices are so dependent on external factors. So these economies are very susceptible to exogenous shocks because they're price takers. And, you know, this, especially because the dependence is so broad, not just for trade, but also for fiscal revenue. So if the sector, if the diamond sector isn't doing good, you know, that limits fiscal revenue. And then, of course, the idea is if the economy is not doing too good, the government should step in and be able to spend. But if the government isn't making money because the economy isn't, you know, producing and selling diamonds, then that just kind of compounds the problem.
No, it really, it sounds like that. And another neighbor that South Africa has, and I'll be honest to say that this one is a bit less known to me. And that is Namibia. How are they doing? Because I know they use a form of the rand. They're part of the union and all of that.
Well, Namibia's economy is also pretty dependent on two sectors, and that's their mineral sector. So also raw mineral exports. And of course, tourism. And both of these sectors really suffered last year. On tourism, you know, restrictions in source markets and domestically just kind of completely cut off that sector, which of course has a lot of spillover effects into other sectors. It's a significant job creator. And then mineral sector, a lot of exports were also contained because restrictions, just you couldn't go to a mine and export the minerals that you produced. So lockdown measures that were necessary had a very severe effect on both those sectors, and Namibia is also highly dependent on those two sectors. And then just to kind of bring the dependence on South Africa in here, Namibia also around 35% of their government revenue takes the form of SACU receipts. So with South Africa being by far the biggest contributor to the SACU revenue pool, when South Africa is not doing good, you know, not trading a lot, then Namibia's revenue also drops quite considerably. And then just on exports, around a fifth of Namibian exports go to South Africa. So, you know, if there's a slump in South African demand, there's going to be a slump in Namibian exports. So that's just another channel, you know, that why Namibia has been struggling. Dependence on minerals, on tourism, and on South Africa.
Yeah, that really does sound like the perfect cocktail of factors that would, you know, see a big slump economically, especially, I guess sectors like that, that have really been impacted by COVID-19. Before we move on to, I guess, the more, exciting region, which is East Africa, all of the instability, because, you know, Southern Africa, SADC, you know, SADC region has tended to be relatively peaceful. I guess most of the time you don't really see a lot going on. But over the last couple of months, we've been seeing a little bit of instability, in a country like Mozambique, which, is a neighbor to a number of, you know, countries, in SADC and all that. Does that have any contagion effect, or is that sort of, has all of that instability sort of, I don't know how else to say it, but has it just played out in Mozambique, or has there been any, contagion on the rest of the region, or is that just something happening over there?
Well, at the moment, there hasn't been that much, or in fact, any contagion. But the problem there is that there's just so much uncertainty because we don't know how the Mozambican government is going to contain the issue. We have seen a little bit of spread in violence into southern Tanzania, which is, of course, then a concern for the Tanzanians. But just with no clear way of or solution of how the government is going to contain the situation, there's always going to be that potential for negative spillovers from there. And then just from a more a macro perspective, you know, Mozambican gas reserves would have been a pretty decent stimulus into the east and southern eastern African economy. So with those projects now being delayed, hopefully just delayed and not cancelled, that could, of course, then have a bigger macroeconomic effect in the region. And the Mozambican economy was almost, the outlook was centered around the development of those gas reserves. So if that doesn't take place, you know, Mozambique doesn't have very good macro fundamentals, you know, if you do take the gas reserves out of the equation. So a Mozambican economy that's not doing good is going to have negative spillovers for the region eventually.
No, thank you so much for that. And I think it helps to paint a little bit of a picture of what's going on, with the neighboring countries. Moving a little further north, and I guess a little to the east. When it comes to the East African region, this has been, you know, a nice burgeoning area for the last couple of years, you know, 5-7% growth in some of the countries. Are we still expecting that much growth? You know, given that a lot of countries are, are still recovering, from the effects of COVID-19.
Well, what we saw last year is that a lot of those East African economies proved to be pretty resilient compared to other countries on the continent. And that's because for multiple reasons. And of course, the reasons matter in magnitude per country. But just generally speaking, East African economies are a lot more diverse than those in other regions of the economy. So by that, I mean, like we discussed in Namibia and Botswana, where they're not that dependent on mineral exports or like some of the larger oil exporters, they're not dependent on hydrocarbon exports. So their economies were a bit more resilient with lower commodity prices, and a lot of them actually benefited from that. You know, lower energy costs, containing inflation, that's going to benefit all the consumers there. And those countries are also pretty dependent on their agricultural sectors, which, of course, weren't as severely affected by COVID-related restrictions. And then another thing to remember is that a lot of those economies went into 2020 with very strong economic growth momentum. So a lot of businesses were, you know, in the process of expanding or doing really good. And then, you take an economic knock like they did. You know, a lot of those businesses are still going to survive. Whereas in a region or in an economy where business have been struggling for a few years, and then you take a knock like that, you know, that's going to knock your business out and it's not going to survive. And then, of course, there's those spillover effects if businesses go out of business and then employees or a reduction in labor and then less consumption. And there's this whole trickle-down effect from the momentum that these economies didn't have. Whereas in East Africa, you know, healthy economy, doing good, businesses are thriving, take an economic knock, you know, most of them are going to shrug it off.
One of the things that seems to be coming quite a big issue at the moment is the issue of vaccinations. And, you know, we've heard all types of estimates about, you know, South Africa, it's going to take us 10, 15 years to vaccinate the whole population at current rates. You've got other governments saying that they don't even believe in vaccinations as a whole. So how do you contrast the way that different economies are approaching vaccinations? Because I'm sure that is a big factor in terms of getting everyone back onto that recovery pathway, at least having that normal the normal economic activity resuming in some way, shape or form, especially for those regions that are dependent on tourism and you want people to come back and all that.
Yes, I think East Africa is quite an interesting example in this regard, because there's just such a conflicting way of how some governments have approached the pandemic in general. Because on the one side, you've got Rwanda that implemented its lockdown very early, and it was a very strict lockdown. And it's been one of the best performing countries on the continent in terms of containing the spread of the virus. And then at the other end of the spectrum, you get Tanzania, which from the start, you know, was in denial as they stopped publishing COVID-19 statistics, kept on saying that it's not a problem. And you know, now we've seen how that has become a problem. The new leadership there does seem to take a less of a contrarian view against they do seem to be accepting that it is a problem that they need to address, which is beneficial for the region as a whole, especially if you consider the East African community and how those economies are interlinked. You know, if you've got one bad apple that's not containing the virus, it's going to spread to the rest of them. And then either you're going to have to sever some of those economic ties, or the entire region is going to be suffering for a lot longer than it would have if all economies, you know, kind of got their houses in order. With regard to vaccines, that's a very difficult question. I don't think you should look at figures if you compare how vaccines have progressed so far and how long that's going to take. The word exponential is overused quite a lot, but I do think we're going to see exponential increases in vaccination as these distribution networks fall into place. And as manufacturing just increases and the availability of vaccines is going to increase, you know, it's going to happen a lot quicker than what it has happened so far. So I don't think we should worry that it's going to take 15 years for South Africa to be completely vaccinated, I think that's some scaremongering.
I like that. That's a very honest take on an issue that is affecting all of us. But just sort of as a last point on the issue of vaccination, in East Africa, because I've personally been to a country like Kenya, and for you to go to Kenya from Southern Africa, you need to move around with a yellow fever vaccine certificate, for example. You need to take the vaccine. You need to show proof when you land in a place like Nairobi to say that I've had this vaccination. And with such disparate responses to COVID-19 and all of that, do you anticipate that there will be some meeting of the minds, just whether it's SADC or whether it's the East African bloc or the West African blocs, just around how, you know, countries in Africa will allow for movement, because that movement really is important for the economies. Whether we're calling it a certificate or a vaccine passport, have you heard any chatter around that, or do you anticipate something like that to be implemented?
I haven't heard any chatter, but it is quite telling that the AU is playing such a prominent role in trying to source vaccines and distribute it across the continent. I think that's recognition from their side that, as you say, this is even though African economies aren't that interconnected as, say, the European economies are with one another, African countries do have a big impact on trade in neighboring countries. And as you mentioned, not just for tourism, but migration between countries is a really big thing. And if you start considering that a lot of migration isn't documented, then that could become a real problem if COVID remains a problem in a neighboring country, then it's going to remain a problem in your country until your neighbors have also, got their act in order. So it's going to be a real problem in Africa. And just because of there's some interconnectedness, there's some, and it's very importantly, there's also labor migration between countries, which doesn't go documented a lot of the time. And that's going to remain a problem. So we'll have to solve it on a continental scale, or at least on a regional scale, for any countries to start, being able to completely get back to normal.
Okay. As we end off the discussion, your thoughts just around an outlook for the two regions that we've been focusing on. We're focusing a lot on neighboring countries in Southern Africa, as well as the East African bloc. How do you see the outlook? The last year has been bad for both regions, but as you said, East Africa has been a little bit more resilient. How do you see things progressing for the rest of the year in the two regions?
Well, as we've spoke about, I think the Southern Africa region's going to be very dependent on how South Africa fares this year. The massive collapse last year means that there's going to be strong growth this year, just looking at base effects. And, that's going to be beneficial to other countries in the region. But, there's just so many uncertainties with regard to South Africa's outlook. And that's if we're looking at factors like Eskom, how much of a problem is that going to remain? Is the problem going to resurge towards the end of the year when there's actually a pickup in activity? There's, of course, the virus. We don't know if there's going to be a third, fourth, or fifth wave. We don't know how that's going to pan out. So I think Southern Africa's outlook is very hinged on South Africa's outlook. And at the moment, it looks a bit scary, to be honest. We expect it to be better than last year, but it's going to take 2 or 3 years for South Africa's output to get back to 2019 levels. So that just kind of gives you an idea of there's a few years lost of development, and we've actually taken a few steps back. So it's going to take a while to make that up. On a more positive note, East Africa, as I said, they proved to be quite robust last year, and we do expect, growth to pick up again, perhaps not the growth rates we've seen over the past decade, especially over the medium term because of these uncertainties. As I mentioned, Tanzania is a wild card. We don't know how that's going to affect the broader East African community. Outside of the East African community, we've got Ethiopia and the conflict there. There's still a lot of uncertainties how that's going to play out. So there's a lot of downside risk. And then, of course, in East Africa, COVID-19, as it is globally, you know, a lot of uncertainty there. So there's a lot of downside risk, but those growth fundamentals that have been driving growth in East Africa are still there. You know, favorable demographics, the expansion of services, and just general economic diversification. They're still there, so they're still going to be driving growth. So the outlook does still look positive for East Africa.
All right. No, that's fine. Thank you so much. That was us with Jacques Nel, who is the head of macroeconomic research for Africa at NKC African Economics, discussing what's going on in and around the region when it comes to, you know, the economies of, we zoned in on South Africa's neighbors such as Botswana and Namibia, highlighting the dependence that a lot of the countries in the regions have on South Africa as an anchor economy, and given the downward, you know, trending performance of the South African economy over the last decade or so, he's just highlighting that that has had a pull down effect on neighboring countries. But if we look a little bit north and east to the East African region, he's saying that those countries came into the lockdowns and COVID-19 on a positive note, and there was good growth momentum, which helped them to be a little bit resilient in 2020. And since a lot of those factors are still present, the outlook for that region is still looking positive. Whether or not people are going to have vaccine passports remains to be seen, but movement is very important, you know, across the continent. And there's definitely going to need to be a meeting of the minds of some sort, just around how countries come together, you know, on that end. And then finally, you know, just talking about the fact that he says that it's the fact that the African Union has been so central and quite instrumental in sourcing vaccines is, I guess, indicative that African countries, you know, are coming together and do recognize the need to be coming together when it comes to things like vaccination and responses to COVID-19, because all of that is going to help to push the economies forward. Jacques, thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks for the invitation.
This is Mudiwa's Take.
Quite an interesting discussion around what's going on, you know, SADC versus, I guess, South Africa's neighbors versus the East African bloc. And you see what's actually happening. And sometimes when we think about South Africa's economic growth and the need, because before the pandemic came into play, the big thing was trying to get South Africa beyond 1 or 2% economic growth and, you know, accelerate that forward. And a conversation like this is really valuable for, I guess, cementing in people's minds that when it comes to this issue, it's not something that's only affecting South Africa or South Africans. It's something that's affecting, you know, the neighbors as well, right? And that's also important because the more money that neighbors have to spend on goods and services, the more that they're going to likely buy from a country like South Africa for certain goods and services that they don't already have in country. And if there is, if you have an anchor economy like South Africa on the low, then it means that regionally, those other countries are also on the low. But the second order effect is that those countries are likely purchasing less from South Africa, and it sort of turns into this cycle where things just aren't going at the rate that they normally could. But also contrasting that with what's happening in East Africa, right? We heard from Jacques that there's been good growth in that region. And I guess what's fascinating to me is the fact that there has been such a disparate response when it comes to how the different East African countries have responded to let's say, things like COVID-19 and the vaccines. But they're going to need to have some type of alignment if the growth momentum in that region is going to go up. On a last point, the passport issue or the vaccination certificate issue, that's certainly going to be something to watch, right? Because as I highlighted during the discussion, if you go to a region like East Africa, you need to have a yellow fever vaccination certificate or else they just won't let you in. And it's likely, you know, this is COVID-19. It's the one disease that has affected the entire world. And we are likely to see something like that being implemented in some shape or form, either formally from a national level or at least on a micro level, businesses only allowing patrons to go in, when they can show proof of vaccination, and you know, stuff like that. And it's not within, it's not without the realm of possibility that people will expect to see some type of proof going forward. So it'll be good to see how people are going to find a way to standardize these processes and how people are going to come together, because as Africa, right, we are, you know, as a continent, we need to come together if we're going to be competing against regional, other regional blocs such as the European Union or the United States. So that's been it. It'll be good to watch what happens on all of these fronts. That's been it for this edition of the Business Day Spotlight. Remember that you can find our latest podcasts on Business Live. That's under the podcast Business Day Spotlight tab. On Twitter, we're #BDSpotlight. And remember that you can review and subscribe for free on iono.fm, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Pocket Casts, wherever you choose to get your pods casted. Thank you to our amazing team. Our producer is Paige Muller. I've been Mudiyo Gavaza of the Business Day and Financial Mail. And this has been another edition of the Business Day Spotlight, which is a multimedia live production. So for myself and the rest of the team, it is good evening, good afternoon, and good morning.